I'm talking today with Dr. Walter Buschek in the reading room of the Food Science Building at the University of Manitoba on February 27th, 2009, Friday. And I'd like to start by saying, can I call you Walter on the tape?
Of course.
Is that good? That's great then. Well, you've had a long, long career working in the grain industry, doing research and doing all sorts of wonderful work around the world and being an administrator in various settings. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit of how you got interested in grain industry to begin with and the research, sort of how you got interested in that kind of research, sort of what sparked your interest in this application of your chemistry training to this particular field rather than other areas that you could potentially have applied that science to.
Thank you very much, Marion, and it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to participate in this, what appears to be a very exciting project. I'm honored to be asked to make a contribution. My interest in wheat began in the early 1950s when I was given a summer job at the Canadian Grain Commission laboratory to work as a summer student research assistant. And what that began is an interest that has stayed with me all my life, all my professional career, from two perspectives. It gave me an interest in wheat, which is an important agricultural product. And secondly, it gave me an interest in an activity called research. And what could be more interesting than having an opportunity to study Mother Nature and find out how it works in all aspects of human endeavor. And so it began with a summer job while I was a student at the University of Manitoba and stayed with me well into post-retirement. I'm still very much involved with things that are going on and I will be talking about later.
It's wonderful that your as we define work, is really something that you can do for play as well as for work. That's a wonderful thing to have in your life. And not everybody has that. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the type of work you've done over the years as a cereal chemist, thinking about the application of science in the grain industry area. Could you tell us a bit about some of the kinds of work you did, projects and so on? There have been many.
It's a story that is very interesting and very complex. The main objective of my research has been to determine the nature of quality that wheat has in relation to its processing into bread. What is it that is important in terms of chemistry, physics, biochemistry, that is important for the ability of wheat after it's converted into flour to produce the product that we prefer, that we like, as we consume the product as part of our food menu.
Right. And in terms of quality, the nature of quality, what have you focused on in particular? What have you discovered in terms of quality aspects?
There is, most of my research has focused on the protein component of wheat flour. Proteins form approximately 13% of flour. They are not the major component, but so far as the quality is concerned, proteins are the most important component of wheat flour. Now, the proteins are unique to wheat. There are many different proteins in plant world, in the animal world, and their uniqueness is important to the way they behave in the processing of a product from one type to another, from wheat into flour. Proteins play a role in the process. What we try to do and have had some success is to characterize the proteins in terms of basic properties such as molecular size and molecular shape. These properties are unique and they play a role in the way the product behaves during processing or the way the product contributes to the nutritional value. There are two quality aspects that interact. One is the physical properties that determine how the product is processed, hardness of grain, for example, will affect its conversion into flour. Protein content of flour will determine how the flour will behave when you add water to it and start mixing it into a dough, which is subsequently converted into bread. But the way the dough develops depends on not only the amount of protein, but the type of protein. So that's one aspect of the role of protein in bread making process. The other factor that comes into play is how the protein is inherited in varieties, in new varieties, as new varieties are developed. We study different varieties in order to be able to characterize those varieties that give, that have better quality for a product that we are trying to make. So going back to your original question, yes, the quality of flour or wheat is determined by the basic properties, molecular properties of the constituents of the flour or the wheat. And once we find out how the constituents play a role in the quality, we go back and determine how that particular constituent is inherited in new varieties, so that we can tell the wheat breeder what varieties to select in his breeding process, so that the new variety that's produced by crossing a number of old varieties will have the quality that is suitable for a particular product.
So when you're saying how proteins are inherited in new varieties, that word inherited, are you meaning genetics, or what do you mean by inherited?
Yes, genetics would be a good explanation. Inherited in this case refers to the way in which constituents are inherited after crossing two varieties that are different. You select two varieties that have specific properties, hopefully by crossing these varieties, the properties that give good quality will be inherited in the new variety. Now it will take maybe as long as 10 to 12 years of crossing and selecting to get a variety that has the desirable characteristics. The characterization of new variety produced by crossing requires many different tests, chemical and physical tests. As chemists, we try to identify the tests that are most indicative of the quality that we're interested in. And then we develop rapid tests that we can provide for the breeder to test the many lines, many varieties that are produced in the crossing process.
When you're talking about the emphasis on protein in particular as the focus of your research, what would be some of the projects that you would have worked on? I mean, I know you've worked in triticale and some of the new varieties of wheat. Could you tell us a bit about some of the applications or particular grain products or things like that that were the focus of your protein research?
The focus has been mainly on the structure of different proteins. In wheat flour, the protein fraction is made up of several hundred different proteins. And these work together to give the complex system that we call dough. So some of my research has been focused on identifying which proteins contribute to quality. Once we identify these proteins, we study the structure, molecular structure, size, shape, composition. We study this structure to determine which part of the structure, molecular weight, molecular size, the coiling of the proteins, and so on. We determine which part of the structure plays a major role in the conversion of flour into bread. Once we identify, say for example, the protein A, because of its molecular size, plays an important role in the function of protein in bread making, we can develop tests to measure this property in the protein that is important to the property, and then we can go to the breeder and say protein X, which has 100,000 molecular weight, is the key protein, and therefore we will develop tests like, for example, electrophoresis, which we talk about quite a bit in this book. We develop tests that focus on that particular protein, and we tell the breeder, give us your sample and we'll measure the amount of that particular protein and tell you whether it's good or not good for a particular product that we are investigating.
And the book you're talking about is this one here, Wheat Quality Elucidation, The Bushick Legacy, edited by Perry K.W. How do you say that fellow's
Ng.
Name? Ng and Colin W. Wrigley.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we can look at that to get more detail.
There's another book that is somewhat more specific that we have published. I was a co-author of this book, and Colin Wrigley from Australia was a co-author, and another colleague from Hungary. And that book deals with specifically two proteins in wheat flour that are most important for bread making quality. These proteins are called glutenin and gliadin. And if someone wants to delve into the details of those two proteins and how they contribute to wheat flour quality, that would be the book.
Right.
It's just been published maybe a year and a half ago.
And did you give me the name of that book? Did you say that? I might have missed that. Did you have the title of that book? Or we could get it if we wanted
I
to add.
I didn't give you the name, but it's the main part of the title is gliadin and glutenin. Mm-hmm. These are the two proteins. There's a subtitle to that I...
We can certainly get that.
Yes.
That would be excellent.
Yes, I have a copy, but okay. I'm sure there's a copy in the agriculture library.
Right.
So much of my research over the last 30 years has focused on this particular protein. And
The two proteins.
Mm-hmm. And their nature, their molecular structure, their inheritance, genetics, mm-hmm. you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, much of the information is what we call basic or fundamental. We hope that maybe at some time in the future the information will be useful. But some information is readily applicable to problems that we are trying to solve at the present time. So our research covers a full range from very fundamental. I prefer the word basic because basic carries a practical connotation that there is an application for what we are trying to do.
If we think about some of the early work that you did, would triticale be the first area where you investigated these issues related to protein quality?
The first graduate student that I had when I came on staff in 1967, his PhD research project was in triticale. We had a very simple question. When you produce triticale by crossing durum wheat and rye, two alien species cross to give third species. There were conflicting reports in the literature that the crossing produces new constituents, new components that are not present in either of the two parents. It's like blue eyes and brown eyes crossed give you something that's not in either of the varieties. And actually, Marion Vesey Genzer did some work and produced results that were in conflict of theory. And although no one had done the research to prove or disprove her hypothesis, we decided to do it. And Perry Ng, not Perry Ng, Albert Chan, my first PhD student, was assigned test the hypothesis that new proteins are produced when you cross two different species, like durum wheat and rye, which are crossed to produce triticale. And so we did the project, and we found that triticale does not have in it proteins that are not found in either of the two varieties. In other words, there are no new proteins. And we published the papers, and I think that put to rest that idea. What the way we explained the results that Marion obtained was that in the fractionation, in characterizing proteins, they are first extracted and purified to eliminate all the conflicting other constituents. And when we carefully and completely separated the proteins in triticale, we found that all the proteins that are present in triticale are present in one or the other parent. So there were no new proteins produced. It's very interesting. What this means in practice, that triticale is nothing more than a combination, physical combination, of the two parent varieties. And we also did some work on starch, but our main interest was the protein component. So the conclusion was, if somebody wants triticale, you can get the same result in the flour and in the bread from mixture of rye and durum wheat. So unless triticale has some unique properties, it wasn't very attractive for Canada to be producing triticale. In France, by modified crossing procedure, they have produced triticales with high protein content, 18%, compared with 12% for normal triticales. And this high protein triticale is being used as a source of protein for animal feed, animals that require proteins as part of the feed mixture, and for hogs, for example. And so it's being grown for that purpose. But in Canada, it's still a scientific curiosity, although I think you can purchase triticale in specialty stores, use it for special products, cookies, and bread, and some interest in.
Your reference to Marion Vasey Genzer, she was a faculty member here at the university as well in, I guess it was home economics at that time, mm-hmm. and currently human ecology. I would imagine this is just one of many collaborations in your research. You maybe you could tell us a bit of your work in this area of triticale, and Marion's would have been, was a sensory scientist. Could you tell us a little how that collaboration, or were there others involved in that triticale work? I imagine you weren't making bread. Maybe Marion was making bread. Is that how all that worked together, or how did that?
They were done during different times. Marion's work was done earlier, by maybe a period of 5 to 8 years. And when I came to university and got my first graduate student to work on this, the plant breeders and the geneticists working on triticale, Dr. Larter and his colleagues, were questioning the results that had been published. This happens not very often, but quite frequently. And colleagues in the Department of Plant Science, where I was at the time, Dean Chevesky as well, challenged us, the chemists, to confirm the formation and presence of new proteins that was claimed were present in the triticale. Another feature that had to be very carefully checked is to make sure that the control samples of triticale and the durum parent and the rye parent were exactly identical as those used to produce the triticale as parents, because there had been some publications which were based on results obtained on triticale and rye, the rye component of which was different than that used to make the triticale. And of course, if that is the case, it's quite likely that triticale rye in the triticale component was different than the rye in the parent that was used to produce the triticale. So we had to plan our work carefully. When we received samples of triticale and the two parents, durum wheat and rye, we had to check very carefully that the rye in triticale and the rye that was used as the parents were identical, were the same. And that required many tests like the ones in this book, and even required growing these varieties out in the field to make sure that the growing cycle didn't produce some change in the triticale to give a new protein. No. That was an interesting bit of work, and I think we resolved the controversy that was in the literature.
And it, that result you were mentioning, that your research showed there were no new proteins in the as a result of the cross, is that result that you found with triticale, is that true for crossing other, was that specific to triticale, or was it, is that a general finding in crossing of other?
Crossing, producing new varieties of wheat, for example, which involves the cross of two different varieties.
And so are you saying this is a finding that is general to crossing other, triticale was durum and rye,
yes,
but for other crossing, again, no new proteins?
Yes.
So it was a generalized finding then?
Yes.
I see.
Yes. Except if you produce a new variety by a technique like irradiation, you can create new proteins by actually changing the gene, but you do that not by physical crossing, but by techniques either chemical treatment or irradiation, where you change the DNA template,
right,
which in turn produces different proteins.
Yeah, and I would think that at the stage you were doing this research, we weren't into genetic.
Now
it's totally different.
They do it, and for example, in India, they were able to change a red wheat into a white wheat by irradiation. And this was a useful transformation for some areas where the preference is for white wheat. And in that case, there was a change in the composition of the protein component.
You've mentioned several times about the desire to produce new varieties. Why are new varieties important? other than to satisfy scientists to come up with and breeders to come up with new strange and wonderful products? Why are they so
new varieties are being produced mainly because the old varieties, after a number of years, become susceptible to diseases. The diseases will adapt to the molecular environment, and a variety that is resistant to a specific disease and produces well under a set of conditions gradually becomes susceptible, and it's necessary for us to produce new varieties that will have disease resistance. And rust is one disease that's mutating all the time, and we have to keep step ahead in order to have a crop that will produce proper seed.
So your research in triticale probably, like all research, raises more questions than it answers and leads you in certain directions. Did that work lead you to apply some of this knowledge, or led you to what would be some of the next things you worked on?
That first bit of research helped us develop techniques that could be used for quick measurement of the composition of proteins in wheat flour. We then were able to extend that work to develop technologies that could help us identify the parents of a new variety by comparing the electrophoretic patterns and bands for particular proteins. We can determine or identify a variety as to its parents, and that information is useful in practice for identifying if a wheat variety meets the regulations of being registered as an acceptable variety for our production.
Now, would Glenlee wheat be one of the things where you applied some of this technology to this particular variety or other wheat varieties? Would that have been?
Glenlee is a very interesting variety in that it's not, doesn't meet our quality requirements because it's too good, too strong. And I proposed that because of its high yielding potential, that we should develop Glen Leaf wheat by introducing a variety, by crossing it with a variety that will make the protein a little weaker.
When just to interrupt, when you're saying a protein is too strong, and you said make it a little weaker, could you just tell us what you mean by that? I'm not familiar with that terminology, too.
Yes. The strength refers to the rheological, the mixing properties of the flour or the variety into dough. And wheat flour mixed into a dough exhibits a property called viscoelasticity. It's both viscous, like honey, it will flow, but also it's elastic, like rubber, and the baking quality of wheat requires a balance between viscosity and elasticity, which are two fundamental properties of rheology, and it has to have a certain amount of viscosity so that you can mix it quickly and develop it properly, but it has to have elasticity so that it can form the structure that is required to contain, maintain, or retain the gas during fermentation and give the bubbles.
All the little holes in our bread,
right,
that we like.
Yes.
Or some of us like.
If it's too viscous, then it won't expand. If it's not viscous enough, and it will give a dough that is very tight, and bubbles will be fine and not the type that we prefer in our bread, although in some countries they prefer coarse bread and so on.
Yeah.
But that brings us into another basic scientific field called rheology, which is very important as far as baking performance of wheat bread dough is concerned.
So I interrupted you when you were talking about your ideas about how to improve Glen Leigh wheat, that it was too strong, and you wanted to propose the idea of weakening this wheat variety. That's where we left off before I interrupted you. Maybe you can go back now to, after we know what you mean by strong and weak, how you propose to weaken that variety and how that that took you.
Yeah. Well, it didn't take me very far because my colleagues at the Grain Commission didn't think it was the direction to go, that we had a variety was exactly what was wanted. We didn't want to produce another variety that would require a lesser amount than the varieties that we now grow. and they did not wish to continue to
Support that direction you were going?
Yeah, they felt it was a conflict of interest, and Glenn Lee was licensed as extra strong for a while, but then it was de-licensed because it marketing Glenn Lee grass wheat because of its requirement of weaker, lower quality wheat type. But I liked it because it's unique, overly strong dough characteristic. It had good carrying capacity for low quality varieties, weaker varieties, and those varieties are not grown to a large extent in Canada. We're doing very well with CWRS varieties. They have not only the type of quality that we need, but also they grow well under our fertility crop growing conditions.
In all of this that you're talking about, with triticale and this sort of competition, you might say, between the favored variety of the day of wheat grain, there always seems to be a search for improving and trying to solve problems in perhaps the processing end, leading to a consumer product. Implicit in what you're saying, there's always the search to solve problems. Could you tell us a bit about what those problems are? Perhaps it's in the processing to produce a kind of bread product that satisfies consumers with different palates around the world. What were those problems that you're really alluding to that your research and others were trying to address?
The problems are many, in addition to agronomic characteristics. There are problems related to processing, such as getting the maximum flour yield in the milling process.
Would the, so you mentioned agronomic problems, is this like the rust issue you're referring to?
The rust issue.
Tell us about rust. It's a nasty little creature, isn't it?
What is it? Is it a...
Or is this totally out of your area, as it is mine?
It's out of my area, but occasionally it comes into play in my area because under some conditions, rust, especially in varieties that do not have rust resistance introduced by breeding, the these varieties will show an effect on the constituents. Proteins will be affected in terms of quantity of protein, protein content, and in terms of the chemistry or the quality of the protein. So selecting varieties for rust resistance requires also careful monitoring for quality, and in many cases the quality is not affected, but the yield is affected, the kernel shape and kernel size will be affected, which in turn affects the milling properties. Percentage of flour that's produced from a given sample of grain, this is affected. And if you go further, there have been effects noted that on the chemistry of the components which relate to the quality, bread making quality in the case of bread wheats.
That's really fascinating. I guess I always think of being a consumer, I'm thinking of the problems related to making bread and not thinking at all about the implications for some of these other sectors, like the agronomic issues you're mentioning and the processing issues. So that's...
There are two general approaches as far as quality is concerned. One is to get the right quality by breeding. This brings in the science of genetics. You select the varieties that you want for quality, and then cross that variety with another variety that has maybe not the right quality, but the right disease resistance, and you cross these two and pick out the ones that meet your requirements. So that's one approach to improving quality of crops like wheat. The other is through the processing approach. You take a variety and grow it because it has rust resistance or it produces high yield. And so you take that variety and modify it during processing to give the right quality that you want. So genetically, you can modify by crossing a weaker variety with a stronger variety and so on. Or you can take the variety that is useful for other reasons, yield, flour yield during milling, color, flour color. Japanese might like it because it has certain. So you can bring about this change by crossing, by but that takes 10, 12 years. So sometimes it's better to take a variety that has the other characteristics and modify the bread-making characteristics by physical or chemical means. And that's another area that I spent quite a bit of time on, and that is the use of chemicals to modify the baking quality of wheat flour without going through the breeding process.
So how would that happen? How would you chemically modify? How did you work on that?
Oh, it's another
in a simple consumer explanation.
Okay. One of the chemical entities that is involved in bread making properties is the presence of thiol SH groups in the proteins. You can modify the number of thiol groups, SH groups, chemically by adding an oxidizing agent. And an agent that has been used until recently for many years is potassium bromate. A few milligrams, say 5 to 10 milligram percent of potassium bromate added to flour during the bread making process will eliminate this deficiency in the variety. So you correct for certain deficiency by adding a chemical, and there are several chemicals available on the market to do this. Another flour improver is enzymes. Special enzymes can be added to improve. So you can improve the quality of the flour by modifying it by adding a chemical or a biochemical during processing. Or you can obtain the appropriate amount of an active chemical by breeding and selecting. We have this technique well under control, and we, our breeders, select variety, parent varieties that have the right chemistry or require very little additional chemicals. This potassium bromate story is an interesting one, and it's only recently that it has been banned when the Japanese have shown that it's it can cause cancer in mouse fed with potassium bromate. So the chemical has been banned, although no one has been able to prove that the very minute quantities of this improver of potassium bromate can cause cancer in animals, animal experiments.
Have there been a lot of changes in the way the processing end of the whole thing has been done that you have observed over the years?
There has been a change, and now it's changed back. 20 years ago, we were really keen on what is called mechanical development of dough. It was found that by increasing the mixing speed of flour, water, dough, you can develop the gluten that is appropriate for gas retention in a bread system. This was introduced and the industry really jumped at it, but in a few years the texture, the eating qualities of the bread, texture was the crumb structure was fine and uniform like styrofoam, and the bread was not very popular, so we've gone back to the traditional sponge and dough process. So basically, there hasn't been a major change in bread making technology. What has happened and is happening is that the number of different bread varieties has grown. High fiber content varieties, multi-grain varieties, and each of these changes that were introduced would bring many problems. For example, when you go from white bread to whole wheat bread, you lose some desirable texture, grain, so you have to go back and modify the process, modify the formula, add more fat, add more sugar, and to maintain the structure and yet have the additional fiber, for example. So there have been quite a few changes in that area. But the mechanical development area that came in some 20 years ago, and it was so popular that most of the bread was being produced by this process, it's basically disappeared now.
Could you just, you mentioned the mechanical process and the sponge and dough process. Could you just elaborate a bit on those two, just so that listeners who may not be familiar with those two processes have a clear idea what you mean?
An important feature of bread making is the development of the gluten to get the right rheology, viscoelasticity that we mentioned earlier. For many years, this development of the right dough was achieved by fermentation. Yeast produces CO2. This expands the dough and in 3 hours or so develops the type of dough structure that is most suited for the type of bread that we like. About, I guess in my time, maybe 50 years ago, it was found that much of the dough development can be produced by adjusting the mixing in the process, dough mixing, adjusting in two ways, speed of the mixer and the time, mixing time. These can be optimized so that you can develop the dough to the right structure by a short time of mixing, 10 minutes, instead of 3 hours of development by fermentation. So this would be a tremendous saving of time and money. And one thing that was not possible to resolve, and that is to, in mechanical development, to maintain or produce the type of texture that we like in sponge and dough process. And gradually, the market for mechanically developed bread went down, and pretty well most of the bakeries now don't use the mechanical development. What usually happens in such situations is that there's an attempt to combine the effects, the good effects of one process with those of another. And indeed, it is possible to combine mechanical development and sponge and dough development and get the time saving of mechanical development with the texture of the traditional sponge and dough process.
You say that's possible? Is it being, has it happened?
It's being used. And special flours are produced in a milling process that will have a chemical, small amount of chemical added that will assist in the development of the dough. It's earlier I mentioned bromate, potassium bromate, which is an oxidizing agent. The improver that's used to improve the efficiency of mechanical development has the opposite effect of bromate. It's a reducing agent. Cysteine, an amino acid, which has a thiol group on it, it has a reducing effect. So it does the opposite. And flowers, those that have in them added reducing agent develop mechanically quicker and produce a structure not precisely identical, but very similar to the traditional structure, which is a variable size of the structure of the breadcrumb.
That's absolutely fascinating. There have been so many changes you've mentioned already in terms of processing and varieties and so on. Can you think of other major changes that happened over your career that not necessarily technology, it could be political, social, cultural, money, financial, other sort of really key changes that stand out in your mind as being very important in terms of how you were able to do your research or not perhaps, significant changes that you had to address?
There have been a few significant changes in the wheat industry. We used to have a requirement, quality requirement, equal to that of Marquis. Marquis was the
gold standard, kind of.
Gold standard. And that had been replaced in, I think, 1971 by Nipoa. And now, I think recently, and somebody from the Grain Commission might have to confirm this, I think we have completely removed the varietal standard for CWRS wheat. So the current statement says something like, it shall be acceptable according to standards of the varieties grown at the time. Whereas before it said, must be equal in quality to Marquis and then Nipoa, so on.
And how has that impacted?
Well, it, I think, expanded the range of quality that is now permitted to be registered in for our CWRS class of wheat. I don't know, there was another change that was being discussed. I don't know how far the Grain Commission got with it as far as the legislative part of the process. And that is the elimination of the requirement for vitreous kernels, percentage of KVD story.
What is a vitreous kernel?
It can be opaque, starchy, or vitreous. And for a long time we've had a percentage of vitreous kernels had to be defined. And my colleagues at the Grain Commission have shown that as far as milling and baking properties are concerned, vitreousness has no effect. So they proposed elimination of vitreousness as a grading factor. There's a table that specifies the various characteristics, and one of them is vitreousness. It will be eliminated, and of course it's always useful to eliminate a characteristic because it eliminates another test that has to be made, and a test that has to show certain value, which adds to the additional work and so on involved in testing new varieties, because not only does this affect the grading process, it also affects the selection of varieties during breeding, because they have to meet these requirements.
Well, you've been talking about the whole issue of grading, and you certainly were involved in some new methodologies of grading. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your work there in terms of grading.
It's an area that we haven't paid too much attention. The possibility of grading grain, wheat, by electronic means is there, and it's used in many industries, but it hasn't come to the grain industry, although the work that Digvir Jayas is doing is coming close in the application of digital imaging to the grain industry. And we have shown that digital imaging can be used to segregate, to identify varieties by external features, shape, size, color, and also by using transmitted light instead of reflected light, one can obtain information on the internal structure of the grain kernels. And various types of damage, physical damage, can be detected and measured quantitatively and can be related to grade. A new grading system would have to be set up to reflect the characteristic that are measured. And when we had our chair program, the objective was to replace the inspector's eye in grading, in the grading process, with an objective methodology based on digital image analysis. Take a photograph, change the photograph to digital form, and then use that, set up your parameters in terms of digital properties. And it's an expensive technique, but I think it will, some aspects of it will come to the grain industry.
What was your contribution in this movement to a more objective way of doing it than the visual method?
We showed that different grades can be distinguished from one another by digitizing. We showed that different levels of amyloid sprouting damage, still word now, can be measured by this process. So some of the basic requirements of grading can be done by digital image analysis. We would like classes of wheat, and if you want to throw in triticale, because these kernels are distinctly different, can be distinguished. Durum wheat from CWRS can be distinguished mechanically. We had hoped to be able to distinguish varieties within a class. Do you understand what a...
The varieties within a class being...
Each class of wheats is made up of many varieties, maybe 15, 20 varieties. And these varieties have to meet certain criteria in order to be registered for that class.
Okay, I get it now.
Okay, so back to digital image analysis, our early work showed that we can distinguish Durum wheat from CW Red Spring wheat by digital image analysis. You get a, put this sample, a mixture of wheats, put it through the machine, and the machine gives you a readout of 10% undesirable varieties or whatever. Or it can direct the loading, the binning of a variety by the information that comes from the computer. One thing we hoped to do, because there's a background of interest, is to identify varieties within a class.
And were you able to do that?
We were able to do that, but not well enough to make it practically useful. The difference among the varieties within a class is too small for even for the computer or the camera to pick up. So some varieties have unique characteristics, unique shape, size, the groove, and they can be identified by digital imaging. Mm-hmm. But some varieties, you could have three or four varieties within a class that are so similar that
so small.
The inspectors can't identify, but even the digital imaging process cannot identify.
I think that our tape is running out of time, and I think that we should, if possible, chat with you again to pursue some of these other issues, like I'd like to know about the industry in regard to this grading methodology, its acceptance or reluctance to accept it, and maybe we can meet again and
sure.
talk about this, because we're running out of tape time.